screen for some reason instead of just at the screen. Like, hey. All
Welcome
right. All right, let's go. Gogs, get us started, buddy.
podcast production, the podcast. That's right, podcast production, the podcast. A podcast
I'm leaving all
a podcast about
that
the minutiae of free programs to make 1 hour shows that no one will listen to. It's completely
Hey,
masturbatory.
at least five people listen. And actually now we're down to four because Nate's on the show. So.
Yeah. I'll still kind of listen. I'll just skip my parts.
There we go. I'm sorry. Run it back. It's Movie the Podcast. That's right. Movie the Podcast. We're back. We're black. We don't want any more bears. And we are joined again by nasty Nate Regolia. And he is participating with his pick, Romeo X Juliet, the movie.
No, it's Romeo plus Juliet.
Not in my world. And they're crossed up. They are star-crossed and they are versus.
Oh, I just mean as far as the
oh, I
the
know.
Logo.
Font-wise,
yeah.
That's definitely a plus sign. Sean will be here soon. Alec
I think
is
he's here
drifting
now.
In the Atlantic Ocean.
I think Sean's here now. It looks like he's here now.
Hey, Sean.
Oof,
yes,
barely.
And guess what? You're going to get your own dedicated audio track, according to Nate, which is something I learned today for no reason.
It's very like jumbled sounding.
Yeah, you sound.
Okay, let me take it off the Bluetooth.
Oh, now it sounds fine. I don't know. Whatever you
sounds very quiet to me.
Anyway,
I'm in the car. It's just the service broker.
It's all good.
Mm.
All right, so everybody's here now.
We're all
Nate,
everyone that's going to be here.
We're all
is here.
Nate, welcome back. Thanks for stopping by again.
Yeah, thanks
Appreciate
for having
it.
Me again. This is great.
Yeah.
It's nice to have a little continuity on my guesting.
You bring an air of professionalism and intellectualism to the show because we're all just kind of vulgar savages. Sometimes listening to you speak, I feel like I have no command of the English language. I feel like I'm
doesn't
like
it suck? Like seriously, like doesn't it, like just eat
I mean,
shit?
I've said this many, many times, but Nate's such a great guy. But like, it sucks because he's such a good guy. Because I kind of want to hate him because he's just good at everything. He's just a pleasant person to be around. And I'm like, fuck you. Like, why can't I be more like Nate? You
he
know
says
what I mean?
Everything way better than we say.
Yeah. Don't want to make us feel bad about ourselves.
Yeah.
One thing I'm really bad at that I
don't.
One thing I'm really bad at that I admire about you, TJ, is
the
depth of knowledge that you hold on movies and the recall you can have on actors and things like that. Because so often I will just fucking go
thank you.
blank.
Well,
on things like that. Same with comics, honestly, because I'll listen to you guys talk about comics too, and I'm like, God, I wish I could like retain some of that shit, and I just can't do it.
The trade-off for me is that I can't remember like anything important in actual life. Like I can't remember like my mom's birthday, but like I can tell you
actual life is made up anyway, so who cares?
Yeah.
You
yeah,
might as well like
yeah.
the fun stuff.
Yeah, and it's also like it also is annoying because like. As much as I try not to be that guy where it's just like, if somebody says something wrong about a movie, like I have remember when Homer Simpson was really mad, but he couldn't say what he knew about Bart and his like face just got like that weird, like if somebody says something like, oh, David Lynch directed fucking Donnie Darko, I'll just sit there and be like,
I will send Bart the money to get home, and then I will murder him.
Yeah. So
like,
it's
double for me because I used to be like the books guy, and now you're here, and you're better at being the books guy. So I got to be like the cars guy, and I don't really know shit about cars. Like
you know a lot about sports.
Yeah,
sports
but
guy.
All of us know a lot about sports. Like that's not unique.
Correct. I don't know. You're still the books guy though, because you've read a lot of stuff I haven't read, and I think you read more than I read now.
Oh, you called him out. Now we know he's gay. We knew it now. The secret's been revealed. Shit.
I listen to books.
I mean, so do I. Also, can we throw that debate out the window? People are like, oh, you listened to it. You didn't read it. It's like, bitch, the information is in my brain. It's fine.
Yeah.
Like, I love audiobooks.
I think as long as you're like, as long as you're engaging your imagination with the story, it counts as reading, right?
It's not like the difference between going on a diet and exercise and taking Ozempic. It's like, oh, I use this sense to absorb it rather than this sense. They're both pretty passive activities, to be honest.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I always get so annoyed by that. It's just like, well, you didn't read it. It's like, I have the ability to read it, but like, I can't read in the car. It's frowned upon. The police keep pulling me over. Sir, put down that absolute Batman trade. You're gonna cause a car accident. Great series, by the way. All right, anyway, let's get into what we watched this week. It's going to be a lively show because three of us watched at least one of the same movies. But I'll turn it over to Nate since he's the special guest. What did you watch this past week, Mr. Nate?
I watched five things.
Jesus Christ. Well, you're really holding me. Oh, Alex, like Gog said, Alec is floating in the ocean somewhere. But yeah, Nate, you were taking up the Alec torch watching five things. My God.
From the ocean?
I've been on a tear lately. Yeah. I'm also from the ocean.
That is my favorite King of the Hill bit. He's Laotian. You're from the ocean? I'm from the house.
So one of the things I watched is Tabled, because we're going to talk about that. One thing I watched was 1997's The Game with Michael Douglas.
It's funny. I've never seen that movie.
You got to watch this movie. This is like the fifth time I've watched it, and I love it every time I watch it.
I'm thinking of Tony Hopkins, The Edge, Whacking Great Bear.
Fighting Alec Baldwin.
I mean, I used to be a huge David Fincher fan. I guess I still am, but I've just never gotten around to watching The Game. It's on the Plex. We've talked about The Game on the show. It's been brought up several times.
Did you hear The Game and then convert it to Surviving The Game and then to The Edge in your head? Is that where that went?
No. Oh. I was just thinking about, like, I think I was more subject matter based. Like, they're out, like, it's like a hunting for sport situation, isn't it? Am I thinking of the right thing?
I thought it was like a Saul type movie in a weird way, isn't it?
Yeah.
Let's ask Nate. He watched it.
The Game or The Edge?
The Game. The Game.
I know what The Edge is about. Whacking Great Bear, Alec Baldwin. Yeah.
Surviving The Game is like a manhunting movie. Yeah. I've seen that.
The Game was part of the GU.
So The Game is Michael Douglas is a rich asshole in San Francisco. The part he's born to play. And he's about to turn like 40 or 45 or something, but it's like a big birthday because it's the same year that his dad was when his dad killed himself by throwing himself off the top of their mega mansion in Presidio or whatever. He's a grumpy jerk, Michael Douglas. And then his brother, played by Sean Penn, shows up. His brother's like kind of a recovering alcoholic drug addict guy who just gadabouts. He shows up and he's like, hey.
The
role he was born to play. Yeah. It's actually like, it's one of Sean Penn's better roles too. I really like him in this movie. Sean Penn gives him this gift, which is just, it's a ticket to participate in a game put on by a company called CRS. And he's just like, hey, I did this before. It was the best thing I ever did in my life. I hope you enjoy it. Of course, Michael Douglas is like, whatever, I don't care about my brother or games or anything. So he tucks it away till one day he decides, eh, fuck it, I'll go in. Goes through all these tests, whatever. It's like a day-long ordeal. And then they tell him, you're not accepted. You're not playing the game. And then stuff just starts to happen that gets weirder and weirder. So he's basically trying to unravel. It's ultimately a movie about movies. It's like about movie making. It's about being surrounded by people who might be acting a part, or you might be in a conspiracy. You don't really know.
I need to watch it. But it's great. It sounds right up my alley. It sounds like I would really like it. It's very cool.
And it ends, the ending's great.
Remember, like, in the kind of the earlier frontier days of the internet, they had those kind of, like, they're not like altered reality games or whatever, the AR thing, but it was kind of like that, where, like, you were involved in some kind of, like, conspiracy and people were playing parts and shit like that. Does that ring a bell?
Yeah, totally. Yeah. That was like a chat room game thing that used to happen.
Yeah, I remember that.
With the gotcha guns? Is that what we're talking about?
Yes, we're talking about Gotcha and the Richard Grieco spinoff movie of the same name.
So, The Game, that was, that's Fincher right after Alien 3, right? That's pre-7, correct?
It's 97, so it just depends. Was 7 in 98, or was 7?
I think
95.
I think 7 was, 7 was either 97 or 98.
95.
Wait.
So it's right after 7.
Okay, it's post-7. Okay. Some reason I thought it was before, although, yeah, I need to watch it.
Yeah, it's great. I love it. I I actually watched it two times because I watched part of it on
Wow.
Tubi and then got tired of the commercials and noticed it was on the Plex, so I kept watching it there.
We're going to talk about streaming services with their fucking commercials in a little bit with the Tabled movie, but man, that is the worst shit. It's one thing with Tubi because Tubi is free,
yeah.
But like Amazon now, you got commercials, and it's like, oh my God. And it's like 4 minutes of commercials, and it's like, okay, like, well, who asked for this?
Oh, it's way more commercials than broadcast TV ever was, where it was like, well, you got like a minute. Don't
pay for themselves, brother.
And I'm paying for this shit. It's just like, oh, it's so annoying.
Anyway. It's part of the game.
Does Triple H show up in the movie at all?
No, sadly.
David Fincher should release a new version that just has Triple H show up for no reason. Just like post credits. Spits water everywhere.
Second thing I watched was 1957's Wild Strawberries, the Ingmar Bergman film.
Oh, look at you.
That was my
nice.
First watch
Very
of that,
nice.
But that movie rules. That was so good.
Have you watched other Bergman films?
Seventh Seal, I think.
Oh, yeah.
What is this movie about? What is it?
Wild
is
just Strawberries?
Wild Strawberries.
Does the title belie something interesting?
It does, yeah. So yeah. The Wild Strawberries referenced are about how, like, a patch of wild strawberries is this sort of, like, lucky, beautiful moment in life that you can stop and, like, notice because, oh, hey, there's just, like, deliciousness presented to me by nature. The movie's about a guy who's in his, like, 70s. His wife is dead. He basically has no friends, but he's this beloved doctor and professor, and he's taking a road trip from like, I don't know, Stockholm or something to the town he grew up in, this smaller town, to get presented with this emeritus award and get to wear a top hat and tails and shit. But along the drive, he picks up some hitchhikers, and he keeps like having these sorts of dreams or visions or nightmares where he's forced to confront a particularly difficult moment in his life from the past and relive it. And it's really this like reflection of how do you come to peace with who you are at the end of your life? Because it's kind of implied that like, well, everybody thinks this is a great man because he's got a great title and he's got all this other stuff, but it's pretty clear that like no one's close to him and he kind of sucks. And so you kind of see how that unfolds. It's a little bit of like A Christmas Carol, but without the moralizing, because it's more just about the peace he finds, I guess, which is cool.
It's a brilliant movie. It reminds me a little bit of the Kurosawa movie, what's that movie called? Ikaru? The one where the old man like it wants to build the hospital. Like I can't remember. I fucked up the name, but it's very similar in tone to that. I love Bergman. My two favorite Bergmans are Persona and Hour of the Wolf.
Persona's really
I don't know
good
if you've
too.
Seen Hour of the Wolf. Hour of the Wolf is it's like his horror movie. It's fucking fantastic.
Nice.
It's funny you bring up Bergman though, because there's on Film Talk. On Film TikTok, there's like this discourse now because I guess Bergman was kind of shitty in real life. Like apparently he was like he was basically like pro-fascist. And you know how like people love to cancel somebody that's been dead for 65 years. And it's just like, I don't care. Like his films don't reflect that. Like, I don't know how you can watch any of his movies and you're like, oh, this guy is clearly a Nazi. It's like, he's not. I mean, he might've been, but like, I don't care because his work doesn't reflect his political beliefs.
Like Wild Strawberries is so sort of progressive in its filmmaking technique that it really like you could see it as being like a well-made 2000s film that was just black and whitewashed, right? Like it's so interesting how the effects are really great for being that age and just the storytelling is, I mean, it's top notch. It's a really great movie.
I mean, he's a genius. One of the greatest filmmakers like ever, in my opinion.
And I watched a movie that has a very similar theme, The Life of Chuck.
Oh, I put that on the Plex. I haven't watched it yet. I've heard a lot of good things.
It's Mike Flanagan directed it, who does a lot of the Stephen King adaptations
on
Netflix.
All he does.
And
Stephen
all the,
King stuff.
Like, Bly Manor and all the other miniseries stuff.
He's doing the Dark Tower.
Yeah, which I'm excited for, because I think if anybody could do it, he actually could, because he seems to get the material in a way that no one else does. Life of Chuck is phenomenal. Like I went into it thinking like, this might be schmaltzy because it's one of Stephen King's like softer novellas that isn't really, it's not a horror story. It's just
I'm not familiar with the story.
I don't even know that one.
So it's told in three acts, but it's told in reverse order. So you start with act three, and act three is basically that it's like the end times of climate change. Everything is going to shit. The internet's down all the time. Power's going out. Like, yeah, it's basically now. And it's a bunch of people confronting what's going on, and then they suddenly start seeing these weird billboards with Tom Hiddleston on them that say, you know, thanks Chuck, 39 great years on it, and the same advertisement is everywhere, and then eventually it starts popping up in stranger and stranger places. The second act kind of covers Tom Hiddleston's Chuck character in one particular afternoon when he like is walking to an accounting conference and hears like a street busker drumming, and he decides to dance. And the scenes, it's really cool. And then the third act is the longest one, technically act one, and it covers his childhood from like when his, you know, it's kind of classic King, where literally every bad thing that could happen to the kid happens in the first like 8 years, and how formative it is. But ultimately it's a movie about like recognizing that you have a limited amount of time to be alive, and that all the things that you do, regardless of how insignificant they may seem in the great scheme, are really, really meaningful and should be. And it really moved me. It was like I legit cried. It was like because again, this is on the heels of Wild Strawberries, which is another movie about like, think right, about what you're doing and think about your life. So I was in this very contemplative mood watching the movie, but it...
I need to watch some like Michael Haneke movies or something that's just like totally nihilistic and depressing, you know? Like,
oh, I mean, the next movie I watched after Stephen King adaptation, which it was kind of a bummer. I watched The Monkey.
I hated it so much.
I think it's a solid five, because it's the kind of movie where I don't think I'll be thinking about it. Like, I've been thinking about Life of Chuck since I watched it like 4 days ago. The Monkey, I'm not really going to think about later. I do think I kind of get the vibe. It's like the whole thing is just like death has a sense of humor and it's cringe. That's like that's all the joke is.
I mean, I think I said it on the show when I watched it, but like it to me, it felt like a comedy written by somebody that's not funny. Like, and I am a diehard Osgood Perkins defender. Like, I love Long Legs. I know it's a divisive movie, but I loved it. I thought it was great. But like, and I've liked his other work. But man, The Monkey just did not land for me at all. And I love to laugh. Like, The Monkey felt like it should have been directed by like Peter Jackson. You know what I mean? Like, you know how Dead Alive has like that kind of like absurdist violence and craziness, but like, it doesn't work from Osgood. I just don't think he's funny. Well, like, funny is very hard.
The movie is like, the movie's trading on only really the surprise kind of funny. Like, oh, this person got their head blown off. Haha, that was surprising, right? And it's like, that works once, maybe. But when that's kind of the only shtick, it doesn't.
Also,
they
don't stick with any of the deaths long enough to even make it funny. Everything is like a fucking Family Guy bit where it's just like it happens and it's over and you move past it. It's
That, I mean, part of it's like you don't, like, it doesn't have enough of an emotional anchor to care about, because it, like, the movie is about two twin boys who their dad, who's like Adam Scott, some kind of weird sailor, finds this wind up monkey toy. And the monkey toy is clearly cursed. He tries to take it back to a pawn shop, and it immediately kills the guy that he bought it from. And then he's, you know, whatever. So they discover it, and they start playing with it, and people just start dying. But they don't seem particularly concerned, and no one in the movie seems particularly, like, one of the most disappointing things is there's, like, a funeral for a babysitter that happens early on, and the preacher at the church is basically like the most checked out improv grade, like, hippie kid version of a priest who's just like, well, yeah, you know, death and stuff.
But that's kind
of
like,
and that's literally the dialogue. It's not
that's
even
half the characters in the movie, though. Like, well, that, fast forward to the brothers, like his boss who's younger than him wearing like an ill-fitting suit
and just vaping a bunch.
And that's like the joke. It's like, oh, look how absurd this is. And I'm just like, not funny.
No,
like,
I think the problem is it's like very cynical. It's like it's trying to be absurd, but it maybe reviles the content and also hates the people watching it. I don't know. I was almost in on the tone until, like, at the very, very end of the movie, one of the main characters gets killed by a bowling ball.
Yeah.
And there's, like, this elaborate Rube Goldberg thing that happens. But the way that the movie is shot and edited together, you see two things happen, and then suddenly the head's gone. But you don't see where the cannon was, or, like, it does. There's no continuity in the scene, so it just feels like they were like, oh, somebody's got to die. We got to Photoshop his head out. That's it. Like, it just felt lazy by the end. And so, yeah, I was sitting on like a 6 for it. And then I just dropped it to like a 4 because it was like, I don't know. That was the last one, though, other than the table movie.
Yeah.
So we'll I will throw to Sean.
You should have watched RoboCop. You needed something to pick up.
Anything besides the King of the Hill reboot. I understand what Nate didn't like about it. I enjoyed it mostly for nostalgia reasons. It still feels like it was written like an out of touch liberal writing about what he thinks good folk.
I think that's my problem with it. Yeah.
Does that make sense?
Yeah. I think that's my problem. Like, and I, granted, I watched one episode. I had one, the other problem I had was like, I don't understand how the timeline works because the show went off the air in like 2009 or 10.
I think so. Yeah. Like
Bobby Hill was at least in freshman year of high school by then, because he did advance in age slightly over the course of the show. But he's supposed to be 21 in this reboot that's in 2025. And it's in 2025 because Dale Gribble was mayor because of COVID and running on an anti-mask campaign. So it's like, I don't understand how Bobby's 21.
I mean, that's funny. That just what you just said.
Well, that works. And the other thing that works really well is Bill Dauterive is full on Bart washing himself with a rag on a stick fat when they get back to Arlen, which I gotta watch. Was endearing. Yeah. Like, that worked for me. But yeah, I didn't dig the, like, we're going to talk about how woke high school kids or college kids are and all this other stuff. It was just boring.
But Steven Root back? Is everybody the same still doing the voices? I know
everybody that's alive.
Yeah.
But it's again, it's like your kind of libertarian uncle, like, kind of not exactly both siding it, because like it doesn't really talk about anything of like gravity, I guess. Like, it's kind of like still dealing with, like, you know, kind of Nate's point. It might make sense more if it was set in like 2017, because it's still kind of dealing with like the identity politics world, and I feel like we're way past that. And I don't know when they started making it, or
what about King of the Hill 2077? They're all like that would be something. Cyberpunk.
Yeah, I'm in.
Yeah, but like, you know, I enjoy it. It's comfortable, but like I it's not. I don't know if I want to add commentary to it, because like the original series had, you know, moments where it touched on social issues, but it also was on for whatever 13 years, and that wasn't the thrust of most of the episodes. But it just feels like out of touch a bit. But and they replaced Khan with Ronnie Cheng, who's a good actor and I like him, but he doesn't do the voice like at all. So it just sounds like Ronnie Cheng and not like, you know, the Khan voice, which, you know, whatever.
Is Luann in it at all?
No.
I
don't even think she's referenced in it.
Yeah, they didn't reference her in the first episode at all. So
it's weird. I mean, I know why she's not in it, because what's her name's dead, obviously, but it just seems weird to not. She was such a major character, you know, in the beginning, in the first, you know, the first run.
Yeah, and it's just like everybody's kind of in arrested development. Like, it's not the show, but the actual state of being. It's like, you know, there's all this stuff kind of in their orbit that's new, but they don't really seem to change. You know what I mean? They're just kind of still themselves.
Peggy's still doing the thing where she thinks she knows how to speak another language, but now it's Arabic instead of Spanish because they were in Saudi Arabia.
She was a Spanish teacher, was she not?
Yeah.
She was substitute teacher of the year.
What was it? Los estudiantes es mis amigos.
Los estudiantes son mis amigos. She sounded like Miss Glanville. Shout out Miss Glanville, South Carolina High School.
I mean, Bill does get a job at a black barbershop, which is kind of funny.
I mean, now I'll keep watching for shit like that. Like,
it's cute. You know what I mean? It's just like, I don't know what I expected. I mean, there is one, I don't want to ruin the joke, but John Redcorn starts making some kind of food. And they're all trying. It's like, oh, this is really good. Have you? And Dale's like, have you given any to Nancy? He's like, I've been giving it to Nancy for quite some time.
Love it.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think it's just one of those things for me where it's like, I get why we keep doing this, why these reboots keep happening for money, but like,
yeah,
I don't know. Lots I'm just like, so many things are perfect the way we leave them, or at least like whatever imperfections have worn away with time. And then it's like, what if we create something that's even less perfect because nobody is in the same headspace they were? And then we'll act like it's supposed to feel the same, and it just doesn't
work. This is going
to
be like a weird point of comparison, but like I feel about this show the way I feel about the podcast, The Bulwark, if you're not familiar with it. It's a podcast of like moderate, never Trump Republicans. Like these intellectual, like kind of like compassionate Republicans. It's like an audience that doesn't actually exist, or at least not anymore. Yeah. You know what I'm saying? So like, it's like, I don't know who it's for.
Yeah.
Like, you know, they're throwing out to an audience of no one, but I don't know. Like it was watchable. Like I watched it all like in a day and a half, just kind of having it on. I don't have like great affection for it. Like I do for the old series, but I mean, I was also, you know, a teenager when that was on, so TJ,
I watched two things, but one is tabled, so we're gonna hold off on the table one until we get to Gogs. But I watched the new best horror movie ever made, apparently. I watched Zach Cregger's Weapons.
Oh yeah,
this is not a promising lead-in because I really want to see this.
I fucking hate. Well, you might love it. Everybody else loves it. I feel like I'm on an island on this one. I hated it. I mean, I hated Barbarian too, to be fair. And everybody loved that movie. Weapons is it's like an idiot's version of Rashomon or an idiot's version of Magnolia, because it's a nothing story that they decide to break up into several bits, so they break it up by the character's perspective. The problem is that when you do that in a story, you're supposed to glean things from a character's perspective that you didn't get from the previous way you saw the actions of the film. But when all the characters are nothing, then that doesn't matter, and you're just stretching out a movie that already has like a fucking weak ass plot. And I'm not going to spoil the movie because Gogs will probably see it eventually. Maybe you guys will watch it. I'm not going to spoil the film, I promise. I hated the payoff of this movie. As soon as they give you the payoff of the movie, I'm like, I'm out. The payoff is fucking stupid. Like, the mystery, it's just like Barbarian. It is exactly like Barbarian. The premise of Barbarian, the first 20 minutes, fantastic. I loved it. I was in. I was intrigued. I wanted to know what the fuck was going on in Barbarian. I was like, this is fucking interesting. They find the fucking... the room in the basement with the camera and the bloody mattress. I'm like, oh yeah, I'm in. This is so fucking cool. Fucking 45 minutes later, oh, it's a fucking mutant rape baby monster. The fuck is this? Like, I didn't want this. This is terrible. I don't give a shit. And I'm not going to tell you what it is in Weapons, but it's just as fucking stupid. Aww. It's fucking stupid as shit. And I mean, I audibly was like in the theater. I was like, oh. There was only like four people in the theater, but I was like, this is so dumb. And I don't know. People love it. People are adding all this fucking depth to this movie. I don't know what they're watching. I feel like I'm a fucking alien this year when it comes to fucking horror movies, because everybody's like, oh, Sinners is the greatest horror movie in the last 20 years. Sinners is at best fine. I'm sorry. It is fine. It is not great. Then this comes out, and they're like, man, I thought Sinners was good. This is even better than Sinners. They're terrible. Like, I'm sorry. Like, watch more movies. Jesus fucking Christ. I hated Weapons. It's trash. I can't wait for Zach Cregger to come out and make his terrible version of Resident Evil, because that's his next movie. I'd love to spoil it once everybody watches it so we can talk more about it in depth. I think that the movie, like, Zach Cregger has it. I'll give him this. I will give him a little tiny bit of credit. The movie looks great. He has a very interesting visual style that I would be into. But man, the plots of these fucking movies, like, when you realize, again, when you all eventually watch this, you think about what I said. When they reveal who the fucking bad guy is and why the kids ran away, you're going to be like, that's the dumbest shit I've ever fucking heard. Also, so if you didn't know from the premise, I'm almost done. I'm sorry. I really hated this fucking movie, if you couldn't tell. So the premise of this movie, and this takes place in current day, this place takes now. So there's a small town and 17 kids from a classroom just in the like early in the morning at 2:17 in the morning, they all just fucking Naruto run somewhere and nobody can find them. But they have ring cam footage of them running away. So you're telling me only the parents with the fucking ring cams have the fucking kids running down the street. You're not telling me that all the other fucking neighbors in this suburban neighborhood don't have fucking ring cameras. They can't tell where they're going. Also, spoiler alert, these kids don't run to fucking Tokyo. They run right down the fucking street. How the fuck did they not find these kids? They run down the street. They didn't run like to another state. Like, give me a fucking break. It's so stupid. This shit, honestly, just one rewrite would make that plot point so easy to fix. Okay, this movie takes place in 1970. So nobody has cell phones. Nobody has fucking GPS. Nobody has fucking ring cams. But no, this takes place in fucking 2025. Why the fuck? It's so fucking stupid. And at one point, the fucking Josh Brolin, he's like, hey, he goes to the cop, and the cop's like, he's like, hey, I didn't hear anything about those dog reports. Didn't the dogs pick up anything? And the cop's like, yeah, the dog cops don't report to you. But that's a great fucking question. How the fuck could the dogs find them? They ran fucking 20 feet down the street. It's so fucking stupid. It's so fucking, I fucking hate this movie. And fuck everybody who likes it. If you like this movie, you're a fucking asshole. That's it. I'm done. I really did not like. I care for the movie, and just the fact that everyone loves it so fucking much irritates the shit out of me because it's so bad. It's so fucking bad.
Wow.
I do like that chick from what's her name? The chick that played Silver Surfer, and she was in Ozarks. Jessica Carpenter.
Julia Gardner.
Julia Gardner, Jessica, who is that? That's from Dexter. She's really good. She's good in the movie. I like her a lot. I hope she gets in more things because I think she's squandered in this film. Also, the guy that plays Wong is like, man, I generally like that guy a lot, but he plays like the woke principal, and it's really annoying the way his character's written. It's just like, okay. Uh-oh, woke principal. I think he uses the term microaggression, and I like wanted to walk out of the theater. I was like, no one talks like this. Like, get the fuck out of here.
All right. Macroaggressions.
Yeah, me too. Gogs, go ahead. Sorry. Go see Weapons and then kill yourself afterwards.
Yeah, so right, I watched
put that on the poster.
I watched three things, one of which is tabled.
Three things.
Yeah, so I watched Weapons. I loved it.
You might like it. To be fair, again, I am in the vast minority on this one. Like, everyone loves this movie. I could be wrong. I will always say this, and everybody might love it. I don't know. I can't get my head around if I don't gel with the premise, that ruins the movie. Like, sure. Famously on the show, Book of Eli, not a bad movie, but I hate the central premise once it's revealed, and it just takes me out of the movie, and it spoils the rest of the movie. It's just how I am. If you get, like, a lot of people had problems with Long Legs, specifically because it was all devil magic the whole time. I love devil magic. It might not be your bag. I think devil magic is fun. But if I, you know what I mean? Like, if I didn't like devil magic, I'd feel the same way. But like, whatever. Sorry. Go ahead.
So I did. I watched one tabled thing. I really did want to go see Weapons until just this minute because
please
it looks
go
dope.
See it. Please, I'll go see it with you.
We'll no, have, I'm not I'll doing go, that. I'm not going to watch it again. There, like tainting my experience, and they're vibrating with hate.
Maybe I'll like it the second time. Wouldn't that be something?
That would be wild. It'd be we would figure out whose aura is superior here, whether it's Gogs's love everything aura or TJ's hate everything aura. Which one wins?
Maybe the one you saw was missing like a reel, and you just don't. You have like 15 minutes of missing content that explain everything.
Also, yeah. Gogs, you don't really love everything anymore. You've softened on that stand.
Yeah, that's true. Or I just keep it to myself. My passionate love for everything. But I did watch a movie that I loved. I watched two things. I watched one movie that we're going to talk about, which I did not particularly care for. And I watched, I'd never seen it before, and it kept somehow, it kept ending up in my algorithm, like scenes from this film. And I was like, I need to, and I just watched Jaws 2, which sucked. So I watched, I had a freaking weekend, and I watched William
Hell yeah.
Friedkin's Sorcerer.
Hell
Oh
yeah.
my God, what a good
Yeah.
movie.
That movie kicks an
Yeah,
unmitigated
that movie's
pile of
so
ass.
good.
Movie rules. Like, talk about
Yeah.
like just a, like a cool dark prep. Talk about a vibe. Like what a like very dark, like very just like nihilistic, like just I don't know, man. It is super cool. And like the thing that kept showing up on my feed was that scene on the bridge. And
It's
then
a
that
psychological horror movie about driving dynamite around and with like an impossibly vibes-filled soundtrack.
the soundtrack,
That
first of
sounds
all, you're
awesome.
right. Thank you. Yeah, the Tangerine Dream soundtrack is just amazing, right? Like, and then the premise is nuts. And it's like these four guys, for those of you, if you haven't seen Sorcerer, fucking watch Sorcerer starring Cap or, starring Brody, Roy Schneider. Like it is like, so it's about these four men who are like basically like they've all fucked up in some way, shape, or form. And I'm not talking about little fuck ups. Like we have
No.
four dudes. Well, I guess the one dude, you really never know how he fucked up, but like the three guys, how you know when they fucked up in big, big ways. And they find themselves basically at the end of their rope in this village. In I don't know if it's in Mexico or if it's in I'm not sure where it is in the in Central or South America, but they're working for an oil field, and then the shit goes down, and there's an oil fire that they can't they got to do one of those on deadly ground blowouts, but the only thing that can blow it out is some really old dynamite that's sweating nitroglycerin 200 rocky ass miles away. And so they're like they tell these guys like, listen, we'll set you up with papers and we'll set you up with money and we'll make it all official if you basically do the it's this is fucking Smokey and the Bandit on crack cocaine. Like we got to get from Texarkana, Texas to Atlanta, but instead of 200 cases of Coors, we got to get six boxes of highly unstable dynamite. And
If I
it's
remember right, this movie
fucking
contains
cool.
like a Palestinian that gets hemmed up by the IDF to show you how long
They're,
that's
the
been going on.
movie, no
Yes,
spoilers, but
actually,
the
yeah.
movie opens with these, yeah, these Palestinian dudes like blowing up a temple or something. And that's one of the fellas on the lam. Like, the movie's cool as shit. The vibes are tremendous. Like, the shot, like, the talking about the scene of getting these trucks across this bridge in this storm. And then to sit back, like I literally said out loud while watching the movie, it was like, they did this. Like, there's
Yeah,
no
yeah.
digital effects. There's no. And then I read up about it. They built this bridge and they built hydraulics into it to make it do all this
That's
shit.
crazy, yeah.
And then they got like washed out, or not the anti washed out, like the river was like too low to give it dramatic effects. They had to wait for like a monsoon to come through and like raise the river level. It is, and then the end just becomes sort of like this trippy, like desperate. It's awesome. The soundtrack's awesome. Roy Schneider kicks ass, and he's like right off of the heels of Jaws, I think. I think it was Jaws in
Yeah.
75, and then this in like either the same year or maybe it was 76 or
77.
77. Yeah, like fucking. And like, if you find a poster, like I met my, that is the
Oh, the
next thing.
poster's
Actually, you
sick,
know what,
yeah.
TJ? I would like you.
Oh,
I'm
no.
officially commissioning you to paint me a sorcerer. You pick what you want to paint. I don't give a shit.
Oh,
But
it's
I would
mostly
like.
vehicle related, but yeah, all right, I can
Yeah,
do
the
something.
poster on the wiki looks like a truck is trying to drive across the bridge from the end of Temple of Doom right before Indiana
I don't
Jones
think I
chops it
can do
down.
better than that. That poster is great. I love
It
that
is so
poster.
fucking cool. Like, and like, even the scene where they're like, so they get the assignment, and then they like basically like Frankenstein these trucks together from like all of these old broken truck parts, and like they cobble it together, and they paint, and it's called Sorcerer because one of the truck says sorcerer. They gave him names. They like festooned them with decoration. The movie kicks ass. Like, it's so good. And with that, most of us watched.
Yeah, then we got to tie back in. Sean said 20 minutes ago something about things not having an audience and why they were being made. We have
apparently
a movie
it had a
that
huge
had,
audience.
Well, like, who is this movie through. For, I think, is the question. I don't know that this movie's for anyone.
Corporate marketing executives.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, this is like
Jeff Bezos.
Yeah, this is a pitch deck presentation for, hey, look at how seamlessly we can merge propaganda advertising with a plot and call it a movie.
What'd you say about the aliens? I was too busy enjoying these Cheez-Its. Like,
dude.
God, that had more life in it than any of his performances.
I was gonna say,
guys. That was like.
I've never, so we all watched the Amazon original War of the World, except for Sean, because Sean doesn't like to have fun. I loved it. I had so much, it's terrible, but it's terrible in the way that like we've talked about this 1,000 times. This is like Birdemic level terrible, because I genuinely think they didn't think they were making a bad movie, and it's just terribly incompetent. Yeah. And like, Ice Cube, who, I'm not going to say Ice Cube is a good actor, but like he's been in stuff where like he's not the worst thing I've ever seen. And in this, like, it's funny because this is a screen movie. So this, which is a trend in films that like I couldn't go away quick enough, because I think there's been like one that was pretty good and that's about it. So the whole movie,
was that it?
No, I was thinking that one called Missing. I thought that was pretty good with what's his name? What's the Asian guy who was in Star Trek and Harold and Kumar?
John Cho.
Oh, John Cho.
John Cho. Yeah, it's not bad. I like that movie. But anyway, this movie takes place on like a screen, like, and it's so fucking bad. And half of Ice Cube's lines sounds like he's reading them off of the same screen he's looking at.
Is it illegal for me to play the audio from it?
Illegal? No.
No, go ahead.
Okay,
commenting on it.
Okay, because hold on, I think I've got it queued up.
How are you going to play it here? Just play it through your mic.
President, gentlemen, we're seeing a full attack on our infrastructure, on power grids, water, communication, and top level military.
I want to for context. This is Ice Cube, who is in charge of all intelligence.
Right, that is true. Yeah,
at his desk in the NSA. Or DHS building,
yeah.
And he is briefing the president, the joint chiefs of staff, the secretary of defense. This is him and his boss, like the national security advisor. This is him. This invasion happened 7 minutes ago.
Yeah, it's an on, like, the aliens have emerged. The tripod is out.
Movie. It happens in real time.
I want to try to remember this. So put a pin on time when you get done this, because that is one problem with the movie I have to talk about.
All right, here we go again.
Mr. President, gentlemen, we're seeing a full attack on our infrastructure, on power grids, water, communication, and top-level military targets. They knew exactly where they were going, and they are systematically eliminating resources and our ability to coordinate a response. Here, let me show you.
We need you to sound more natural, Cube. Here,
sound like he has something in his mouth when he's speaking.
You know what's never crazy? Said Ice Cube has never said half of those words prior.
If they fed like an AI Ice Cube's voice, it would sound more natural than that.
Hold on. We gotta get to here. We go. Oh, wait, hold on. Pardon me. I went the wrong way.
Here, let me show you. These locations are our global response headquarters, our most sensitive targets, and they're taking them out one by one. Based on their prioritized destruction of these critical intelligence command centers, my analysis suggests nuclear power facilities are next. Electric grids will follow, leaving us completely helpless.
Do you think there are no takes in this? Do you think he recorded this all at home and sent it in, and they're like, this is what we have?
So this is a lost COVID movie that was made during lockdown that they decided to dust off, I guess, before they lose the rights or some such. But he has all of the emotive range of like a Pizza Hut training video, like explaining about how to like upsell the guest on a stuffed crust. Like
my favorite part too is like when anything terrible happens, like he's, you know, it's a screen movie again. He never leaves his office. So like, you know, his daughter's dying and he's just like, Oh, hold on. And then he's just kind of
doing that. It's like his daughter's having an alien induced abortion in the back of a Tesla. And he's like, oh no.
God, yes.
Or like his son gets fucking nuked. His son gets death rayed.
But he's fine then.
Because of a green screen. But his son gets death rayed. And his response was, damn.
Yeah, he does the same oh no when like his best friend lady who was doing the ice raid at the beginning of the movie, like
everybody else is just as bad.
I mean, everybody's not as bad as Cube is, but everybody is just as bad. Like Clark Gregg and Eva Longoria are in it. And they're doing the same, like, I guess I'm just gonna read these. Like,
dude, her sweaty ass was out there, like just She has the thirstiest picture on Teams. For those of you in corporate America who revile the sound of a Teams call, fucking trigger warning, right? Like this movie is all Teams and Zoom, and like she's got this picture. So here, timeline wise, this stuff happens, right? Yeah. And then Eva Longoria, there's no like, maybe we need to set up a perimeter. Maybe her ass just takes an Uber to a crash site and she just starts fingering a meteor live on Teams while streaming to the one guy who's in charge of looking at all cameras.
Well, she's in charge of NOAA and NASA.
Well, she wears a lot of hats, but not well. And then there's the other.
I mean, that's kind of analogous to present day. Like, there's people in charge of like 8 different agencies that don't know what the fuck they're doing.
Well, fair. And then I guess they got like Ice Cube had to get like a virtual warrant. Like, he sent a PDF of a warrant out to like the chick played like a hot broad. She was the chick. She was like the psychiatrist in Step Brothers. Where Will Ferrell's like, I've traveled 200 miles to give you my seed. Like, she is like, that's like, she's leading the FBI raid on like Prince Dookie or whatever the name is of the guy who's going to release all the files.
He's the anonymous guy. Because the movie, the other thing about this movie is that it thinks, or at least it thinks it's tricking people into thinking that it's an anti-data collection surveillance movie, even though it's only anti the government doing that. And it seems to not understand that all of the services that it's using the entire time are also collecting data.
Absolute balls of them to be like, hey, we shouldn't be looking what's in people's Amazon carts.
It's the middle of Last Jedi thing that you've pointed out several times, Sean, where it's like, Disney should not be telling me to deal with, you know, to worry about these rich people selling each other arms.
So just real quick, for those of you playing our home game, the aliens show up to come and suck all of our data.
They want our data.
And the problem is,
and they have little bugs that live off of data.
The problem is that they've been sucking our data since Roswell.
It's literally the joke. Yeah, they are. It's literally the plot of the film. They have these little bugs that eat RAM. We're
fresh out of internet. Yeah, no, it's right. The ants are getting smarter. Since Roswell, they've been sucking our data, but then Anonymous finds out about the Goliath program, which is going to spy on everyone at once and create too much data, and then you're ringing the den bell, and all of a sudden the aliens have to suck all of our data at once. But because he's in a command center that has infinite data, unprecedented connectivity, all the power in the world, but still, like, people are obeying traffic laws, and like news broadcasts are still happening in this world. Hold on. He decides that his daughter, who is a doctor who does gene things, who is impregnated by an Amazon driver, because the bio aliens are made of both computers and blood, that maybe we can upload a blood virus into code And to do that, his hacker son will give the code to the daughter, and then the daughter will turn the code for the virus into blood, and then we'll put that on a thumb drive, and then we're going to Amazon airship that via drone into the center of the DHS complex.
Yeah.
Yep.
This movie sucks also, on ice. Like,
does this movie take place over the course of like a day or months?
It takes place over the course of like an hour and a
half. An hour?
Yeah. It takes place. I think it's in actual real time.
Real time.
They're able to mobilize all armed forces all in nations. The world in like 5 seconds. And then
all nations in CNN's like in an unprecedented show of unity and power. Everyone's attacking at once. And then it's just stock footage of parades and like military formations.
Well, God shared with me earlier that they didn't even make their own disaster B-roll. They're like, fuck it, we'll take real disasters and just animate aliens over top of it.
Yep.
Yeah.
And the aliens
looks so cheap
have
too. It's disgusting how bad the movie looks. Like, the CG is terrible. It's also like so much of this movie hinges on, okay, It's in love with a surveillance state because it gamifies it and makes it seem cute. So Ice Cube spends the first 20 minutes of the movie like basically bringing up anybody on Google Maps in real time and just clicking on them, and he can listen to exactly what they're saying while they're talking.
Yeah.
And he's doing that to spy on everybody in his family too, which I get, like, they're trying to establish a story where this guy is so used to watching and listening to people that doesn't actually engage with them. And so we're supposed to emotionally bond with the fact that, oh, he doesn't know his son at all because his son is the leader of Anonymous.
Yeah.
And he somehow has never figured out with all of his fucking NSA and DHS shit that his son is Anonymous, which just, that begs belief right there. But so he also is, stupid. You know, he doesn't like his soon to be son-in-law, the baby daddy, and it's just all, everything here is so flat.
Baby
cliche.
Daddy into an official NSA computer.
Yes.
Like, that's the tag.
At one point in the movie, this is probably my favorite plot point of the whole film, to get the blood virus into the aliens, he needs to upload it to a thumb drive, but he doesn't have a thumb drive. And then when confronted with this fact, he's like, I work for the government. They don't even allow thumb drives in here, which I'm like, okay. And then so he has to order one off of Amazon.
So like,
he has to order a thumb drive off of Amazon so the Amazon driver can send a drone to him. It's just like, what the fuck is this movie?
You could literally, you were on Teams. You could drop the file in chat. Like, you could, like,
Like,
he also, like, he goes to Facebook and logs into Facebook. There's like a thing where the only thing that he remembers of his now dead wife is all of the Facebook stuff. And when the aliens eat his Facebook data, we're supposed to feel sad because he's lost his entire past. It's just
they're eating all of our data.
It's dumb and cynical, and it seems like, if it's a COVID movie, someone was sitting there going, hey, cool, this isn't good, we tried. It was harder to make this than we thought, and then they shelved it, and it's the cynicism being like, let's release it anyway, because I have no idea when it was all put together. Like, you could have shot all this footage in 2020. And they could have been sitting on it going, like, none of all these performances are terrible. Because the way that all the screens are set up looks so fake because everything is this flat, glossy, high-def thing. So it doesn't even look like you're looking at a computer screen.
No.
Like, they didn't bother with that level of verisimilitude to make you feel like, oh, maybe I'm kind of watching. And literally everything's just an unpulled thread.
This is another one of those projects, and I feel like I'm going to bring this up till the end of time every time one of these things pops. But how bad was the Batgirl movie? Like,
I was just about to say that. Like, they literally deleted the Batgirl movie, but they put this out. Like, I know it's two different studios, but still.
Well, and Warner Brothers is putting out that Acme versus Coyote movie. So who knows? They
that
might still have
Batgirl.
That
premise actually
somewhere.
Sounded good, though.
Yeah, no, I'm into it. I'll check it out.
This movie, like,
it was awesome. I loved
it. It was not. Like, this movie is so bad.
I was laughing my ass off.
No.
I was having a lot of fun.
I was mad. I was mad at Nate.
Better than
Biden, coded president.
Better than weapons.
So there's like a
I
Joe
think it's.
Biden coded president in the movie, and he's played
Oh
by like
yeah.
a guy that does impressions, and I don't know what his name is,
Yeah,
but
oh,
you've
gosh, you know
seen
that
him.
guy's Jim Mesmerican, something like that.
Yeah, that
Jim.
is who that was.
You've
Yeah,
seen
that
him
guy,
because he used to do
he does
impressions in the
really good.
90s, and now he's kind of on Reels and TikTok and shit doing the same thing.
He
But
does good impressions, I'll give him that.
he has three lines, and one of his lines is to literally say the title of the movie in the line because he
Yeah.
says, "I see no other option but to start this war of the worlds to save us all." It's just like, Jesus
Oh.
Christ. This
Yeah.
movie sucks so bad that I found the one guy on Rotten Tomatoes that gave it a positive review, and I went to his latest post, which was from July of last year, and I made sure to tell him that this movie sucks.
What did he say about War of the Worlds? What was his
He's
review?
like,
Do you got his review
say what
handy?
you will, but at least it's fun.
I mean, I
Like,
agree. I loved it. I
well,
mean,
I'm gonna
it's
go on
kind of
your
worth it
Instagram
for
and tell
me that
you suck.
you guys watched it just so I could get the phrase sucks on ice. I haven't heard that before. I mean, it's really bad, but like to me, this is gonna go in the oeuvre of like again, like The Room, Birdemic, like Let me get
that kind
the
of bad.
middle way opinion. Nate, is it Birdemic entertaining bad, or is it like, I don't know, chill
It's
factor bad? Like, is it?
I think it's 50-50 because it's like it is
God damn it.
entertaining at points. Like I did laugh at it,
Classic Nate.
but
Pick a side,
it's
Nate.
more like it's more a good movie to project behind the bar in a shitty bar where you're not listening to it, but you're just watching all the bad
Right.
facial reactions while you're
You're
drinking a
watching
cocktail.
Ice Cube's reactions
Yeah,
to
like
things. Yeah.
I could do that with it. I don't know. I don't think I would ever bother to watch this again.
A drinking game would be the only thing to make this useful. Or, you know what? Like, yeah.
Oh, a drinking game would be great for this. Yeah,
This game,
somebody's got
this
to
movie would
come.
also work a lot better if you found out that this was like, what's the movie where Jake Gyllenhaal is trapped in a never
Source
state of
code.
dying? Source Code.
Source code, yeah.
If you were source coding Ice Cube and he was just like trapped in an AI somewhere, and like this is his one like way to potentially connect to his family ever again, like that makes
So
this
it's
a
like
better
a
movie.
reverse Brazil.
Yeah,
Yeah,
like
I think the redemption you can give this movie is it's a movie that is
sucks.
metatextually being like, what if the person who's in the movie theater with you and who's talking it to the screen the whole time during the movie is the main character in the movie? Because that's
Right.
really what Ice Cube's function is he's just like, oh shit, oh no,
You know,
oh
the one
hey,
thing,
just a second, let me help you. Like he's just answering his cell phone during a regular movie screening.
something I was thinking about, and that you brought up the movie theater, and I, you know, when you put Ice Cube and Eva Longoria in a movie, I imagine at some point they expected this was gonna have a theatrical release. Can you imagine seeing this in a theater?
If I had paid US dollars for this, I would be riotous, to
Like,
say the least.
if he's on a Teams call with her, is there a scene of him just gooning? Because that I feel like that would bring some verisimilitude.
That'd
You
been
never
better,
see
yeah.
him.
You never see him waist down. He could be pantsless. He could just be,
He gets
you
up a
know.
couple of times. He tries
Yeah,
to
he
get
gets
out of
up.
his office and he can't because it's
You
locked
know that
down.
job. That dude's jaking
Oh,
it
that
like
scene is so funny when he
constantly.
tries to get out and he's like, oh, damn, locked down. Oh, come on, this movie rocks. It's so
This
good.
movie, like,
I like it the more I think about
there's a scene that
it.
happens where there's two scenes that
You
happen.
see?
One, his daughter needs to get to a hospital, but all the hospitals are full. So he's like, get in that Tesla Model Y and I'll take it over. And then you see the dash cam of her driving through what is a world-ending event, and it's not wall-to-wall traffic, it's not cars, it's just driving down the street. It's
Yeah.
just driving down the street. And then at the end, where they have to get the drone in the NSA building and they're dogfighting with alien faces or whatever, the drone gets knocked out of the sky, it can't flip itself over. So
Yes.
they hot wire a homeless guy's phone and wire him $1,000 in Amazon goodies to go flip the drone over. What's his address, sir? Stoop? Like, where is this getting delivered to? Like, what are we doing?
How can you say this isn't a good movie? Come on. It's
If
so
you
good.
Like corporations, this movie's amazing because there is no fake corporate. Tesla, CNN, Fox News, Amazon, Zoom, WhatsApp,
Facebook and Tesla.
Facebook. Did I miss anything else? Like, it is nothing but just corporate, like it's disgusting.
Yeah, and it's thanks to all of them that Ice Cube is able to save people and that he is able to save the world. Because the governments of the world, despite cooperating together at light speed, cannot do anything. It takes all of our tech bro overlords to save us.
What's the name of her? It's like, did you make that cannibal virus? Like, what is the name of the damn thing?
Like, it is something stupid about it.
It is. It is.
We it probably is, should get. We've gone an hour. We haven't talked about.
We don't have to talk about Romeo and Juliet. It's fine. It's a 7. I want to keep talking about War of the Worlds. Like this movie's an affront to God. Like they should not like the audacity of them of a company that if I say to my wife, cinnamon rolls, then I will get every Amazon ad. Like everything will talk to me about. Cinnamon roll pans, various types sure. of cinnamon, all the flour. Like the fact that it's trying to rail against some sort of like police state or what's the word I'm looking for here? Like spy state,
just Big Brother like, surveillance state thing.
Yeah, surveillance state. Mm-hmm. The fact yeah. that was like the tact they were trying to go for, it's like get the absolute fuck out of here. Like,
oh, yeah. Well, because at the end Ice Cube joins his son to be anonymous together.
Yeah.
And he's very anonymous. Like he's yeah. well known. They yeah, know
he's
exactly
he's
who
extremely
he is.
Well known, and he goes to the like the president and other
he
people who
the
are still alive.
Like, I will be watching you.
Yeah, he's like, I'm tired of watching everybody else.
Yeah,
I'm going to be watching you from now
the
on.
The government was in on the aliens, and they wanted to like I don't even remember.
Well,
they,
one
like,
guy in the government was in on the aliens was well, kind of thing. There's like one it's, bad
it's,
guy who
it's what's his name from the MCU.
Yeah, it's Clark Gregg.
Clark Gregg. Yeah.
But Phil anyway,
you may remember him from other films such as Choke. He was in that.
But anywho, that's War of the Worlds, a movie that apparently is in what's it when you don't need to have licensing anymore? Public domain. So that's probably why they made it too.
Oh well, yeah, the book.
Well,
the book
yeah.
is
oh,
like over 100 years old. So yeah, I think.
So we should make it.
Isn't it anything over 75 years is in public domain, something like that?
Yeah, as long as they're not renewed. It's a thing, but yeah, most of the time stuff has fallen off, and War of the Worlds has. So yeah.
Shout out to the original though. War of the Worlds, like the H.G. Wells story, fucking dope. Like real good.
Never read it. I've heard the Orson Welles radio drama, which is cool.
Yeah, but this sucked. So
I loved it. I don't care what you say. I thought it was one of the most fun movie experiences I've had this year. Give me absolute trash as opposed to this fucking to weapons. You know, at least this movie was just so fucking bad from the jump. It never gave me hope that it was going to be like a well thought out film.
Just lowest brow all the way is what
oh,
we're going
I mean,
for.
If you're going to be bad, be like incredibly bad.
This is incredibly
like,
bad.
It's oh,
really,
it's so
it's really good at being bad. I think that's
it,
a success point for it.
It's so bad that you're like, how did anybody like, again, like somebody said earlier, like, how did you watch this and go, yeah, this is fine. We're going to put this out. And this is the number 3 movie on Amazon right now. At least it was when I watched it yesterday. So
it's got a lot of traction for all the wrong reasons.
Well, it's getting a lot of buzz because the whole reason we all watched it, it's like, it's getting clipped to death on TikTok, memeified. And now it's like, you know, it's going to be fucking Morbius. What if they do a theatrical run? Because of, like, kind of like they did with Morbius,
you know,
or,
what?
Like,
if they released it in theaters, I would
go.
I think we have to go, right? I think we have to go. Yeah.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
Everyone has to dress up like an Amazon package. Like, everyone's going to bring their drones. Everyone's going to throw their thumb drives. Yeah.
Dude, I don't even have a thumb drive. Also, what kind of tech guy doesn't have a thumb drive? I have like several within an arm's reach of me. And you know what's funny? I don't even use them. But I have them. I don't know why I have them.
Because you can send files over the internet faster. Like,
That is true.
if I need something, I email it to myself. I'm like, that'll work. And I want to kind of explain how we watched this. I watched this because I thought Nate had watched this.
Fair,
And then
yeah.
when I found out that Nate hadn't watched this, I got very angry. So then Nate watched
I
it to
watched it,
help
yeah.
bear the burden. And then TJ jumped in.
I watched it because it just sounded amazing. And I'm, like I said, I'm glad I did. I loved it. I had a great time. It's gonna be in my top 10 this year.
Just Oscar bait.
Dude, it's, oh God, what a treat. I mean, I literally was laughing the whole time. It was like, where's the floor on this thing? Like, it kept getting worse and worse. And I don't know. I loved it. I thought it was great.
And no one dies. Spoiler alert. Like,
Yeah,
everyone
it's a War
lives.
of the Worlds movie with no stakes.
Well, the thing is, there's
Everyone.
only those like eight people in the whole movie. Like, no one else is in the movie. So, other than the stock footage of people maybe walking from 30 years ago, there isn't anything.
But like
I mean,
everybody that like
I've seen YouTube fan films that had better production value than this. Also, can somebody look up the budget? I'm dying. If this was over like $600, I just don't know. Like, what the fuck?
Well, I mean, they had to do a lot of shipping to make this happen, so.
Yeah, sure. All right, let's get
All
into
right.
Romeo v. Juliet, Dawn of Romance. You like
So,
that one? You like
that was good. That
that
was solid. I like
one, huh?
that, yeah.
Thank you, thank
All right, so Romeo, Juliet, star-crossed lovers in fair Verona. Movie opens with, some news lady talking
Oh,
about
this fucking opening.
how the
Oh my.
Montagues and the Capulets ain't having it no more, never have been,
And
continue to not have it.
it's shot like a television show, like it's edited like a TV show. It's very weird. I don't
This
hold
movie, before we get into, like,
I
go
don't want a
ahead.
Monday morning quarterback William Shakespeare here, but watching this, it occurred to me for some reason that like the main characters should be from they should switch their surnames because Juliet Capulet sucks. It's like being named Linda Bobinda. Like, I don't care for it.
And
And they should
Romeo
Linda
Montague.
Julia.
You don't like
That's
Romeo
funny.
Montague?
That's fine. It doesn't rhyme. Juliet Capulet is awful.
Yeah, banana fana faux fana. So anyway, so we all know the story. The Montagues and the Capulets hate each other in fair Verona. But
Yeah,
that's
somehow
cool.
you've gone this far and don't know the storyline of Romeo and Juliet. I don't even know. Like, how is that
So
even possible?
then the story happens, and then that's the
Story
whole
does
movie.
happen.
Like
They meet up, they fall in love.
they meet up, like the
Well,
Capulets and the
Romeo is a
Montagues,
real
like,
bummer because he
yeah.
just got broken up with, so
You
he thinks
have
he's never
to,
gonna
okay.
love again.
We know the plot, so
Yeah.
go on, go into more of the aesthetics. That's very
Dude, the
important in this
vibes
film.
are
Can
like,
we talk
I
about the dialogue real quick before I forget?
yes. Talk
Sure.
about the official dialogue from William Shakespeare.
Well, not so much that, but the way it's performed, like they're all over the board, and it doesn't feel like there's any like coherent direction on the how to deliver the lines. Because
I
like
agree.
Pete
Yeah,
Postlewaite and
I agree that'll.
what's Paul Sorvino? Well, Pete Postlewaite, I think, just talks like that in general,
Well,
but.
Postlewaite's like the most Shakespearean
Yeah,
performance in the whole
but
thing. Like,
Harold
yeah.
Perrineau, who's absolutely chewing the entire universe in his performance, which I think is really good. But then you've also got like DiCaprio and Daines and, a couple other people that are just delivering this like straight, like flat, like California affect. And it's like super incongruent. Like it's already like, I know they're trading on the incongruence of the old-timey language with like the modernish setting. And that makes sense. But like the overall just like incoherence of the line readings is
Yeah.
very distracting.
Well, I
I
think what's
see.
interesting is like I think I feel like the early part of the film, like when DiCaprio is playing pool with Benvolio and they're going through that, and like that back and forth feels really wooden. Like DiCaprio doesn't even know what the words that he's saying mean
Yeah.
necessarily. He's inflecting at the wrong points. It's bad. He gets better later in the movie. But it seems like when he's acting off of Claire Danes, they can sort of do Shakespeare well, but the rest of the time, they independently have a difficult time doing it. So yeah, I'm with you because it feels like the adults can wield the material better than any of the younger
So,
people aside from Perrineau.
I'm going to make a really weird comparison, but this movie reminded me, and I don't think it's intentional, but it reminded me of Sukiyaki Western Django, where Takashi Miike had an entire Japanese cast speak English where they don't speak English, and you could tell, but like he did it because it's weird and funny, and you have that great line, "That's tits on bull talk, man." Like, that shit's amazing. But this
That's
movie,
real
like,
samurai bullshit.
it like, I don't know if it worked, because it's like you guys said, like, it's like when it's delivered well, it's delivered very well. But like, man, when it's off, it's like it sticks out so hard, and it like takes me right out of the scene. Cause like, I'm not gonna sit here and tell you I'm not a big Shakespeare guy, and I'm not like the most well versed in his material. But I've seen a lot of I've seen more Shakespeare movies, like I've seen all the Kenneth Branagh stuff. Even when I don't quite gel with the language, a lot of times in a good version of one of his plays, like a movie version, the performances like carry me through what they're trying to say. If I don't quite understand, you know
The
what I mean?
context gets you there.
Yeah. And I feel like sometimes this movie does a great job with this, and then sometimes I'm just like lost. And I feel like the performances don't help me along with the pa
Did you guys ever see the Ethan Hawke Hamlet movie? I can't remember. I think they did that all in like old-timey dialogue in a modern setting, but
The
I don't
McDonald's
remember.
one?
Is that what it was?
It isn't the it or no, that's Macbeth that was a
Yeah.
McDonald's thing.
Oh,
Yeah, never mind.
not that I don't remember. But like, yeah, I mean, we've all seen a million Shakespeare adaptations, even things like 10 Things I Hate About You is it loosely a Shakespeare
For Taming of the
adaptation.
Shrew, right?
Yeah,
Yep.
yeah. But it's just like, and Nate, I guess Nate said, or maybe TJ, it does seem like they get better as they go on. Like, this is like, I'll let TJ talk about his rule, I guess. But it's an odd movie that it gets better later. But like, you got to sit through like a lot, and it's like The Fifth Element. And then there's like, it feels like a protracted, deleted scene from The Birdcage
Yes.
with her mother. And I mean, it's tough. TJ, you want to talk about expound on your rule?
Yeah, so if you listen to the show, or if this is your first time listening to the show, I have a rule. It's called the TJ rule. And that rule is very simple. It's if a movie doesn't win me over in 20 minutes, that I should turn it off, because if a movie can't win you over in 20 minutes, it probably is going to suck. And I'm almost always correct on that. This, however, is the first time that I feel like I've found a movie where I hated, I'm not going to sugarcoat it. I absolutely hated the first like half an hour of this movie. I hated how it opened. I hated all the editing choices. I hated just like everything about the beginning of this movie. Like, it took me out of the movie so hard. But I was like, I gotta watch the movie for the show. But I will say that eventually the movie kind of calms down, and he doesn't stick with those editing choices as much. And it's not like the ramp ups and the speed ups and the ramp ups and the slowdowns and the like tight pan ins. Like, it's like very like spastic editing is the best way I can describe it. But the movie, like, about, I would say probably 45 minutes to an hour in, like, calms down. And it's still visually interesting, because like, I like the costume designs in this, and I like the like semi-modern setting or whatever. I think all that stuff works. I think it looks cool. But like, once he calms down with all his like crazy editing choices, and he lets the performances go, and I think the soundtrack to this is excellent. Like, a fantastic soundtrack. Once he lets that stuff shine through, then the movie gets really good. I think the second half of this movie is fantastic. I think the first half is a nightmare to get through. And it's very weird to me that like the first half of this movie is so much different than the back half. Because it's almost like he like realized that his style didn't work and then was like, oh, okay. Like, I don't know. It's very strange, but I love I thought that the second half of the movie won me over. Whereas the first half, I mean, if I was watching this at home, I would have, not for the show, I would just turn it off. Like, I could not. That first 15 minutes is a nightmare. Like, I
Maybe
hated it.
it's meant to be intentional and it's just like clumsy because like the first, half of the play is like this kind of like exuberant, kinetic,
Sure.
like young love and everything's all over the place and everybody's partying and having a good time. And then it gets like very like maudlin and serious, like as the play does. I think I might even push it further than TJ. I don't think this movie's very good until Mercutio is killed. Like, as a
Yeah,
movie,
that's
like, there are
fair.
parts of it that are
Sure.
good, but I think it really succeeds Aperno again with, I think Gog shared the meme where it's like the greatest performance in the history of acting ever. But I mean, he is very, very good. And like, I kind of like, I don't know where I come down on Leguizamo as Tybalt because he looks cool. His performance is,
I kind of love it. It's
yeah, like
kind
it's really
of,
hammy.
I don't
It's like
know.
really
It's,
arch, and like I don't know how to feel about it. I think I respond to the art direction on him and the design more than like the performance itself. But like, Perrineau's great, and then you know DiCaprio and you know where he's getting banished and like all that shit's really, really fucking good. But god damn, that first like an hour, I guess, like TJ said, is a fucking slog.
Well,
Like,
I
and
think you
parts
hit
of
it
it.
too, because
Go ahead.
it is the play. I mean, that's part of the problem. Like, the play is a nothing burger for the first like two acts, because
Yeah.
you're just like, okay, really? Because like the most interesting part of the opening to me is the TV voiceover conceit, where we're going like, okay, cool, somebody's got to tell us, somebody's got to situate us, and it would have just been like a person would come out on stage and tell you all the prologue shit. And then we would go to the stuff that was happening. But the problem
Right.
is the beginning of the play hinges, like, the "Do you bite your thumb at me, sir?" scene is played so much for comedy with this because of how, like, and Jamie Kennedy's terrible in this movie. Like, it's
Oh,
just
he's
the,
awful.
it's so, like, it's the worst foot to start on, is like, we're gonna make these guys seem so irritating that you absolutely hate them and you have no interest in learning more.
They're bordering on splatterpunk performances. Like, I don't know the
Like, so, and I love that. I love that back and forth from the play, because it's such a funny, like, people trying to like flip each other
Yeah.
off but not get in trouble for it. So cool,
Right.
whatever. But it totally deflates the tone, and then it turns into this like Michael Mann action sequence that kind of doesn't make any sense. The one guy
Yeah,
gets
no.
shot and is clearly fine later, but Tybalt
Yeah.
like gets him in sights and hits him,
Well, it's
and
one of the problems when you turn swords into guns. Like, it doesn't, you know
true,
what I mean? Like, it's like, yeah.
Shout out to
yeah.
Final Fantasy VIII.
But
Yeah,
you know,
well.
it part of the problem is yeah, it's like you were saying, Sean, it's the play is like, okay, here's the world of common day. Romeo is a bummer at the beginning of the play, and all he's doing is talking about love like he's never gonna find it again, and everybody else is just being a dipshit. And then we have to get situated with Juliet, and she's just like kept in the attic kind of situation. And so there isn't anything. And there
But
isn't
like,
anything until they meet each other, and then it starts speeding up, but it takes a while, because then you got to go through this other, like, all the teen melodrama stuff that people talk about, like Shakespeare meant this to be a comedy through and through, because it's like, these are 14-year-old kids. They don't know what the fuck they're doing. Look at them act like they're in
yeah,
love.
true.
But like,
Yeah.
imagine if you went to see this performed like as a play, and they're like, "Well, the first two thirds of this play are kind of boring, so what we're gonna do is we're gonna turn the lights all on and off at random times and shake the stage around." And like, you know what I'm saying? Like, it's like I you can get there, I think, with the same art direction, with subtler editing, color change, you know, color grading changes, like some soundtrack cues or whatever, but it's so like off the wall. Like, there's so much going on, you know, visually with nothing going on plot-wise, that it's like it's hard to watch. It's like boring and like nauseating at the same time in parts. I don't know, maybe
Nauseating
I'm
is a great word. That's
totally.
exactly how I felt. Like, I felt like sick
Well,
watching the beginning of
that's
this
just
movie.
like, that's just the Baz Luhrmann style of things. Like, I've recently enough watched Moulin Rouge and Simply Ballroom, which are the other two movies in this trilogy. That's the Red Curtain trilogy is what these three movies are, because they're all play coded. And he does the same, like, slam in to introduce somebody, and you have this, you know, you're doing all these really weird, sickening camera movements that I think were like playful and edgy maybe at the time. They seemed more interesting, and now it just feels like, no, this is, you're not doing
Yeah.
anything with this. It's just happening. It's just a director's signature thing. I think the movie could
Yeah.
have been more interesting if the first third was just like, you know, Seven level, like, drenched in rain the whole time. So, and that would be on the nose, because Romeo's depressed and whatever, but at least like it would be
It's
a vibe
something.
that would then it could emerge into this weirder vibe later as stuff picks up, but it just kind of is all over.
So for another comparison I'm gonna make, because I do love out there like camera movements. Like it can work in the right context. Like I'll use Irreversible as a great example. Like beginning of that movie is a chaotic mess, and Gaspar Noé actually built this like this camera rig that would force the camera to go 360 degrees. And it's dizzy, and the soundtrack has that weird like B note through the whole thing, where it sounds like you're gonna like watching the movie and listening to them. That soundtrack makes you feel like you're gonna vomit, but it's a tonal thing, right? Like
Well,
that scene is disgusting, and that
the
go ahead.
movie's about chaos and dance and movement, you know what I mean? So it's thematically congruent.
Well, I was talking about Irreversible, but yeah,
Oh, sorry, you're not sorry.
Climax is
Yeah.
very similar. Climax is another great example. Like I can get into that stuff if it gels, and I don't feel like his style gels with what he's trying to do in this movie. And again,
Well, there's
maybe I'm wrong. Maybe I'm wrong because I'm not as familiar with, the play and all that. But like to me, like the beginning of the movie is just like it's just I'm just like out of breath and I'm bored. I don't know how to describe it. Like it feels like a workout, and I'm like, what is this?
There's a scene that kind of tagging up on what Nate said about like the mood. There's a driving scene in here that looks like he had just seen Lost Highway earlier that day before they
Right.
shot it. You could shoot the whole first two-thirds of the movie in that tone, and then break into the color and then do something else, and like it gets super chaotic. Like I think that might work a little bit better. Like, but
Yeah, I
it
agree.
I feel like he's not sure how to communicate these things visually, and like it makes the audience even more confused as to how I'm supposed to interpret it.
Yeah, I agree with that.
I think a lot of the problem with the opening is it's you're dealing with, well, you're dealing with rival gangs basically, but you're trying to convey it in a way that's poppy and somehow not dangerous. Like
I mean, it's
the
all
Mafia
West
is,
Side Story, right?
has it been like, and I forget, has it been like a Cold War that just got hot, or is it always been a shooting war or a stabbing war
Yeah,
between the Capulets
I
and the
think it's supposed to
Montagues?
be like a generations long beef that has been going on, and this is just like,
But you see what I'm
Escalating.
saying? Like,
Hatfields and McCoys situation. Yeah.
is it active? Like, is it like
No, I don't
we're
think it's an on-site thing, Gogs. I think it's a we'll take a couple shots here and there as we can. We'll pop a couple, but it's
because it
not
seems
like a.
because there's a lot of times where it seems like they're willing to talk shit and just sort of push it to whoever's going to flinch first and call it a
Well,
day.
they're also, if I recall, I think it's explicit in the movie, but they're all like aristocrats, so they're not out there just like drunkenly brawling with each other all day long either. Nate, you're the one that would know
Yeah,
this
no,
better.
they're both I mean they're important families in Verona, so it's yeah, they're both rich. Like they're basically like two mafia families
Right,
where
right.
but you know there's no, there's not supposed to be a police force in the original play, right? Like the guy that is the police captain in the movie is actually just the prince of Verona, who is basically like in name only. He can't do anything because these two families run the stuff.
That makes sense.
But yeah, it would be it really should be more of like, I don't know, it should at least take itself a little more seriously at the beginning so that as you move to how serious as it has to go to resolve the plot in a meaningful way, that lands. And it starts like peak
Yeah.
silliness and then
Well, I
tries to
just,
like slam you down
I mean,
into. I
we
mean, I feel
shouldn't,
like it
we
would have been
shouldn't.
better if they just gradually, like, you can add the craziness throughout the movie. Like, I think, like, when they do the choir and they're doing fucking Purple Rain or whatever, or no, when doves
The
cry,
doves cry, yeah.
like, that's pretty crazy. Like, you can incrementally have, like, crazy shit, but, like, it seems like it's all front loaded,
Yeah, it's
Sorry,
you
Sean.
can't like start stop like that. No, all I was gonna say was like I don't want to undersell, and I don't think we should undersell the importance of the 1990s girl bean flicking community that this movie
Yep.
like
Oh my
either
God.
started or carried on. And I think
Women, I mean, Leonardo are DiCaprio was in his peak of his powers back then. I mean, I wanted to have sex with him. He's very good in this movie.
He looked, also, I mean, who didn't want that the like pauldrons that, Halloween costume? Like, that's badass to have the shoulder armor.
His Hawaiian shirt game in this movie is sick as hell. Like,
this movie was also like, it was like posterized. TJ brought up the soundtrack. I saw that CD in every girl's room that I ever went to their house. Like, it was like a phenomenon in a way that, like, I don't think, I don't know. I'm not a teenager. I guess they don't have like romance movies that like escape velocity the way this did in the day. True. I don't think so. At least not aimed at younger people. Maybe they're tied up in like those like Hunger Games type movies and Twilight, I guess, or whatever.
They're too busy playing Fortnite Battle Pass.
Yep.
Hey.
It was like, I think, a very, you know, I'm trying to, you know, think of a movie for us that it would be for, like, if we were, you know, girls of that age. But I think it was a very formative movie. Like, it's like Reservoir Dogs for young girls.
I would say Usual Suspects for ladies.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, totally. Like, totally.
Like, it's lots of dorm rooms had this poster.
Yeah, it is like a film, you know what I mean, for better or worse. Like, it is, Gog said, it is a big swing. It has, like, authorial and artistic intent. It's just, like, going 1,000 miles an hour just to slam into a wall and then expect me to be with you like on the ride to the hospital, I think is a big ask.
Yeah. I wonder if, and I didn't look this up, so we'll just have to trust that this idea might be sound. I wonder if like Baz shoots those first 20 minutes of the movie and they're looking at dailies and the producer's like, bro, this is not Shakespeare. You got to dial this shit back. And he was like, okay, I mean, but I'm not cutting out what I started with, because that's what I wanted to do. And maybe that's a lot of what happened. Because like you look at something like Moulin Rouge, right, where this doesn't go away in Moulin Rouge. Moulin Rouge stays pitched like wild music video nonsense the whole time. And it's consistent. And this, this
is also after, like, this is like, I want to say this is probably, if this isn't his first movie, it's one of his early films
before like the second movie, maybe second or third.
Yes, I mean, like, by the time he gets to Moulin Rouge, he's established, so now he can kind of go hog wild and do whatever the fuck he wants. All right, do we got anything else? We want to get into five knuckle shuffles. This is gonna be a hard one to score. I will be the first to say that.
I just wanted to just like, when you guys are watching, like, the, I don't know why. Well, I know why I thought about Dick Tracy, just because of the very stark, bright colors and, like, whatever, right? But it was also giving me, like, for some reason, like, Crow City of Angels.
I could definitely see that.
And sort of Southland Tales, because it's, like, this hyper-real, like, it's not dystopian, but it's, like, right on, like, the edge of dystopian,
it's like,
kind
it's
of vibes.
To being
the
a cyberpunk movie in ways.
Like, they're like hanging out at like rundown carnivals, and like
there is like blight and decay everywhere. I think maybe when you said Southland Tales, it just made me think of them walking down the boardwalk, that kind of like, you know, post-revolution beach town or something.
Yeah. Like we won, now what? Like, it's got interesting vibes. And the fits, can we talk about the fits? Because I know we touched on them,
fantastic, dude.
But like the and the guns are just they are Army of Two blinged out. Yeah. Like, it is, I want that Mercutio dagger 9mm. Like, that thing is silly.
Like, the open magazine seems like a fucking nightmare logistically, of like all the shit that can get stuck in it. But
but it looks cool as hell. Yeah,
it looks cool as hell.
I know TJ hates it, but I enjoyed the rapier and the sword and all that.
I mean, I hated it less this time, but it really bothered me when I was younger. But yeah, it didn't bother me as much. Also, sorry. Fun to watch Emmett Walsh show up in this movie.
Yes. Also, not really in any Shakespeare thing in his role. He's just like,
oh yeah, he's just there.
I'm Emmett Walsh.
No, he just showed up on the set.
Poison.
He's just playing the chief from Blade Runner.
But I also did not mind I didn't mind Leguizamo's performance. I don't know. I think I have a soft spot for him that I wasn't aware of, but there's something about I was like, oh, this is fun. This is fine.
Also, shout out to Paul Rudd in a totally perfunctory performance.
Yeah, Paul Rudd is just playing.
Yeah.
He's playing. No, he's playing. Did you guys watch Parks and
Prince
Rec?
Valium? Oh. Prince
If
Valium.
you
Yeah,
watched,
of course I did.
you know how he's like the heir to the candy fortune, like
Yeah.
Bobby,
Yeah.
whatever. That's just this character. He's like,
Yeah.
okay, that's cool.
I like him in it because he delivers the exact thing that you need, which is he looks uncomfortable and he's making Claire Danes look uncomfortable when they're forced dancing with each other. And he's just like trying to grin his way through, assuming like, oh, I get everything. This is surely going to work out. And he's just, you
Yeah,
know.
I'm handsome.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Also, Claire Danes was technically a minor and Leo was an adult, so I'm sure he was into it. That probably helped their chemistry.
Oh,
Yeah,
really?
well, this I
Like
think this is
Juliet
when he
is
established
technically
his cutoff, his age
what's their
cutoff.
age difference? I thought they were on the same
Like
age.
4 or 5 years. I think she's 17 and he's like 22, 21, somewhere in that neighborhood.
But
You
that's
know who
also
was originally
canonically
cast as
accurate,
Juliet?
right? Who?
No.
Natalie Portman. But Natalie Portman was like actually 14, and she read on camera, like they basically were like, it makes Leo look like a pedo in this movie, so we
Yeah.
gotta get him out, we gotta recast her.
Put a hat on a hat.
Luke Besson was in the background going, I don't see the problem.
I've got a role
Makes,
for her.
he's like,
Makes the
she's
movie
too
even
old
better.
now. This
Yeah.
musty old bitch. All right, five knuckle shuffle time. Nate.
I'm gonna go with a score that rhymes with my name because I really like this movie, even though I do recognize it has a lot of
Fair.
flaws and it's rough to start, but I think it's an eight. I have a
Right.
lot of nostalgia connected to it. I think the look and style of it is iconic in a way that very few movies ever reach. Like, this is Star Wars level iconic. This is like you can think of this movie and be like, that is a piece and a place and an idea and a vibe. And there's no other Shakespeare adaptation where I'd be like, yes, I can totally invoke this specific thing. Like, and I've seen the Branagh ones. I think they're really good. And I can tell you what they look like, but I wouldn't be like, oh, you know, Branagh's Hamlet has a vibe. It's like, well, it's polished. Like, I could say it's polished.
Yeah.
This movie is like, this is this movie. This is no other movie. And
Yeah,
that's a
and it's
hard
very
thing to
unique.
do.
Yeah, that is very fair.
And I do think that I think, you know, we touched on this, but the second half of the movie is really strong, and the ending especially is really powerful. Like, for being two young actors, they manage to demonstrate like the desperation of losing your partner and then wanting to kill yourself, like in a way that doesn't feel hacky or
Yeah.
melodramatic or anything.
Real quick, about that. So I thought it was funny. It's like a good, it's a good thing that this movie takes place in like modern times, but not modern enough where they don't have cell phones. Because if they have cell
Yes.
phones, this whole movie is the plot's
Oh, sure.
thrown
You just
away.
send a text like, I'm still
Yeah.
alive. Don't
And
worry. I'll be an
in a
asshole.
movie, I'm gonna die, lols.
a movie that struggles with restraint, I think should be commended for not slamming a coda onto it or something, some kind
Yeah,
of like
I agree
extra
with that.
scene at the ending.
Yeah. But
There
it's
wasn't
an
a
eight for
stinger
me.
for the Shakespeare verse.
Yeah, you know, Romeo will return in Romeo Must
Yeah.
Die.
And Romeo Must Die, hell yeah.
Gods, I'll throw it to you.
Yeah.
I am going, I said it earlier, and I'm sticking with it. I'm giving this thing a seven. I didn't hate my time with it. I think that I said in the group text, like this movie helps prove the thought that Shakespeare is meant to be seen, not read. Like, even when they're saying gobbledygook about whatever, you can pick it all up from context. The story is, you know, seminal and timeless. Like, you know, it's West Side Story. It's all these other, you know, star-crossed lovers doomed to, you know, it's a good story. And it's well acted in the end. And I love like Pete Postlethwaite, rest in peace. That guy's a fucking G. I
I didn't
like
realize that guy
Leguizamo.
died. That guy
I
was
think he
great.
died like 2 years
Yeah,
back,
he
I
died
think.
right after
He died in
Inception.
2011. Yeah,
Oh
he died.
God, really? Okay.
Yeah.
Well, he's oh he I can't think of a movie he's been in where he's bad. He's one of
Yeah,
those
he's real good.
actors that just shows up in everything, and he's always that guy from that thing. and he's always good in it.
Steven Spielberg said, Steven Spielberg said he was the best actor he ever worked with.
That's high praise. And he worked with a shark.
That's
This
true.
the movies, like the vibes are wild. The guy who played Mercutio is insane. The costuming's bananas. It's just like, and there's all these things I can appreciate about it, but it's also like I won't return to it. So like I'm giving it positive, but there's no reason for me unless I'm going to be assigned to do it. Watch again. So 7 for me, dog Sean.
Oh, yeah. This is a 7 for me too, based almost fully on vibes. I mean, Nate said it's iconic. He's right, man. Like, you can picture that armor, that embrace that they have. Like, these guns and cars have stuck in my head forever, to the point where I'll see a new design for an electric car and be like, oh, it's a Romeo and Juliet car. Like, there are a lot of things in this movie I flat out do not like, or I find like unwatchable, not compelling, but like they really do rally, like, and it is an artifact. You know what I mean? Like, it is something that will probably never happen again. It's weird that it happened in the first place. But like, just the idea of like this major motion picture is like super experimental is interesting. Like, it's a very cool movie. It's just there's a lot of shit in it that doesn't work for me. If they tighten it up, I think this is it reaches beyond cult classic into actual classic status. And maybe because we're not like the appropriate audience for this, I guess. Maybe my read on it's not good, or like I have too many hangups with it that a lot of people wouldn't. But just from a filmmaking perspective, it struggles a whole lot. In the first half, I know we're beating that point to death. But it's just like a very, it's cool, man. It's vibes. Like, I can't be mad at it like that. So it's a 7. I don't think it could go any higher with all the issues that we've raised with it. TJ.
It's a 6 for me, dog. I want to go 7 just to, be cool like everybody else. If the first half of this movie was different, it would be higher. That first half really took me out of the movie. But like I said, it does rally, and I don't think it's bad. But also, like, just on Front Street, this is just not a movie for me. This isn't the kind of stuff I'd ever sit down and watch. I do think, and I agree with everybody, that's like this is a very unique film. It's very singular. It is very memorable. But it's just something that like I just don't care about. So it's hard for me to like get invested in it. And what holds it back even more, what handicaps it even more, is that fucking beginning. Because I cannot tell you how much I hated that opening. Like, I've never hated an opening, but like that was like BVS levels of like the movie starts and I'm like, oh my God, like what the fuck is this? But ironically, if they kept that up, I don't know, it almost kind of would work because it's weird that they just hard cut and get rid of it completely. But I do think that like there's a lot of good in this movie, and it probably is a 7 if I really thought about it more, because there's great performances. I love the character, like I love the costume designs, I love the soundtrack, I love like the overall mood, I love the like kind of modern aesthetic. There's a movie I really like that's also based on a Shakespeare play called Titus. It's based off Titus Andronicus, and it's got Anthony
Wow.
Hopkins in it.
Yep.
And that movie is awesome. Now, that movie isn't like, I don't even know how to describe like the visual aesthetic of that movie. It's like modern slash like almost like post-apocalyptic like stage play. I
Yeah.
love that movie though. I think that movie is incredible. But again, like I've talked about it on the show a million times. I like the talk another Shakespeare thing. I like that Ethan Coen,
The
Denzel
Cohen
Washington,
Macbeth with
Macbeth. I thought that was great. I loved it. But
Denzel,
again,
yeah.
like you give me like a cool visual aesthetic, and I will walk with you down the road. I will take that in. But again, just things that hold me back. The opening, some of the incongruent performances. Like, I don't think it's bad. Like, I can't tell you it's objectively bad, but it's just something that like I couldn't get fully invested in. So I'm gonna give it a 6. But upon another rewatch, it probably could jump up to a 7 or an 8, to be honest. So who's got a pick? Who is getting the pick next week? I have a pick
I've
if
got
nobody else
one,
does.
if you
Sean, go
don't.
ahead.
Oh, I wanted to do the Quick and the Dead.
Nice. Ooh. That's a good choice. Leo's in there.
Leonardo DiCaprio. Mm-hmm.
Oh, I forgot he's in there.
He's both quick and dead in the movie.
I was gonna go with Pete Postlethwaite and go with the Usual Suspects, so we could feel uncomfortable and watch a what's his name movie, a Bryan Stinger movie, possibly. But we're gonna do The Quick and the Dead. I haven't seen that movie in years. I like that.
Got Gene Hackman.
That's directed by
Sam Raimi.
Sam Raimi, right? Mm-hmm. Yeah.
The Oldsmobile is actually in the movie.
Oh, no shit.
Yeah.
And, all right, Nate, everybody.
You're welcome Nate. Back if you want.
Cool, yeah. Thanks again, look, Nate. I'll try to watch it, and I'll text y'all. We'll figure it out. If I can pop right, in again, cool. I'll do it.
Nate, thanks for stopping by. You're always welcome.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah, man. And everybody else, you know what to do. Eat your own ass. It is the giving season. So the most important person to give to is yourself. That's what Amran told me.
In fair Verona. Yeah. A man is not entitled to the eat of his own ass.
All right.
All right, everybody. All right. Bye-bye.
Bye.